A house that moves to being fully electric, with solar panels and an electric vehicle, and using finance to do so, can save thousands of dollars a year. Rewiring Aotearoa, a non-profit organisation making the case for electrification of homes, businesses and communities, has today put out its Electric Homes report. It says New Zealand's likely one of the first countries in the world to have reached a tipping point where full electrification of homes and vehicles delivers both cost and emissions savings. That's because of New Zealand's highly renewable grid. Just over 90% of all electricity generation comes from renewables like wind, solar and hydro. This for the last quarter of 2023. Meaning that when electricity is used in place of fossil fuels, emissions drop. Mike Casey is chief executive of Rewiring Aotearoa. He's also known for his fully electric cherry orchard in central Otago, and we've spoken previously to him about that. Rewiring Aotearoa is loosely based off the American and Australian versions, pushing for full electrification. Morning, Mike. How are you?
Morena, Catherine. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on again.
I bet it's a crisp and stunning central morning, early autumn
I'm looking
morning.
Out the window right. I'm looking out the window right now. There was definitely some frost bothering the viticulturalists of this area. Luckily for us in Sherry's, we've harvested now, so we get to sleep in through the cold, which is nice.
Very good. All right, let's work through what you've done here. Can you explain broadly, first of all, what the report finds?
Yeah, so the report essentially now finds that not only when you electrify a full home, not only are you saving on emissions, which is something we've obviously known for quite some time, but it's actually in every household's financial best interest to electrify the six machines that exist in their homes now, which are the cars, their cooktops, the way they heat their water, the way they heat their rooms, solar on the roof, and batteries.
People are going to find that hard to get their heads around at first grasp because of the upfront capital costs, and you include those in this calculation.
100%.
So let's work through some of those big capital purchases. The big one, of course, being a full electric vehicle, and we're talking full electrics?
We're talking full electrics here, that's right.
So costs in the tens of the thousands of dollars?
Yeah, so basically what we've tried to do is have a look at what the cost associated of financing the upfront capital costs of all the machines in the home, including the electric vehicle, and comparing that to the cost of financing the same machines if they ran on fossil fuels, the cost of electricity and the cost of the fossil fuels to run fossil fuel machines, and generally worked out that the average household in New Zealand, even at a 5.5% interest rate, is going to save about $1,500 a year being fully electric compared to if they're running off fossil fuels. And if they can get access to low interest finance, which is something many of the banks are offering now, that's anywhere between $4,500 and $5,000 a year. So really significant savings at a time that we're trying to focus on bringing down the cost of living.
So over what time frame, if you're making the capital costs investment today, over what time frame would you be in the black?
So pretty quickly in a lot of cases, and I think the one thing to highlight is everybody is going to be different. Like, this is a report that looks at the average household in New Zealand, but some people are going to have more kids, some people are going to need to drive a lot further. So it really is variable. And so one of the key things we've done in the report is sort of look at, certain scenarios. But it really is a case now where we think that you can be in the black from essentially day one. So even when you're servicing the finance on a new electric machine, you will still be saving more money than the cost of finance. And that's the really important thing to get across here.
Apart from the car, the model includes purchase of solar panels and battery. How essential are they to the overall equation?
Yeah, so they are pretty essential. You can save money by going down the path of just electrifying the machines in your home and not generating your own and storing your own power. However, what we're also starting to see now is a lot of talk of infrastructure upgrades and things like that, which most pundits are expecting the price of electricity is going to, going to rise for the consumer. And so part of this is making sure, like right now, solar panels or energy generated on your own rooftops is the cheapest energy in history, and it's the cheapest energy for New Zealand households. So part of the kaupapa now is figuring out how is it that we can really roll out solar and battery systems within homes to keep that infrastructure cost lower and ultimately save New Zealanders money.
But at the moment, to make that $1,500 a year saving, this must be part of the model. You must have these as part of your model.
Yeah, I mean, I think the simple answer is that you're still going to save money, but you're going to save more money when you generate a lot of that energy yourself. So that is a key point to take into account. And I think the other key point to know is that, you know, customers have to pay for the poles and wires that make up the national grid. So while you might be saving money now, you know, a lot of people are sort of suggesting that the price of power on the electricity grid is going to go up. And so we think the best way to sort of hedge against that and ensure those savings are locked in is, you know, when you buy solar panels, you lock in the price of power at 6 cents a kilowatt hour for the next sort of 25 years. So it's just an important component of the overall electric home.
It's hard to accept, given so many households are struggling with paying weekly bills at the moment, are thrown by the slightest capital expenditure, that this could be economically viable for them. And it is very dependent on access to financing, is it, Mike?
That is 100% correct. And so the next thing we have to do as a country is figure out how is it that we can get a large family in South Auckland to you start using electric appliances and start maybe generating some of the electricity themselves, because that we know for a fact that that is the best way to bring their energy costs down. But how we go about doing that, you know, 47% of New Zealanders rent, they don't own their own homes, which means they don't have access to sustainable finance. So we have to start looking at new innovative projects that, or innovative sort of finance types, really, finance products, really, that ultimately allow this to happen. So that's kind of what the key thing is that we're looking to do now at Rewiring Aotearoa, is sort of figure out how it is that we can make sure that everyone in New Zealand is brought along on this inevitable energy transition. And I'll stress that it is inevitable because the economics says that this is going to happen. So how do we ensure that everybody in New Zealand is able to benefit from this?
Can we just talk about some of those upfront costs? For example, at the moment, to set up solar and a battery in a way that would make this workable, what are you talking about as an upfront cost?
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere between around about $10,000 is probably what you'd be expecting to pay for a standard system, you know, here in New Zealand. I think one of the, you know, the key things to remember is that when you do buy that, you lock in a much, much lower price. So when you look at annualizing the price over a long period of time, it becomes the cheapest energy you're ever going to get. But yes, the barrier is the upfront capital cost. And so really what we've got to figure out is how can we make sure people aren't paying the upfront capital cost on day one, they're instead spreading it out and paying it back through the savings that they can make.
Can we just crunch some numbers here? We've got a graph up on our webpage, and sorry for that, listeners. It's, you know, it's a graph with a bunch of numbers. But for those of you who want to know, show me the money. That's what it's there for. Can we just work through
that?
Gas, LPG and petrol home versus electrified home. So you might have a gas oven, say, and a petrol vehicle, hot water heating, and perhaps a gas stovetop versus electrified home. Work us, just break it down as to how you've worked out the total costs, including finance, how you've worked it out, and how the different examples here compare.
Yeah, so the easiest way to look at that is probably to think about just imagine that you're building a new home, and at that point you get to decide what of the six machines are going into your home and what essentially fuels those machines. What we're looking at when you look at the total cost of energy plus the total cost of financing those machines, it's probably going to be, you know, for an LPG home in the South Island of New Zealand, it's in the vicinity of $20,000 a year, and probably $19,000 a year for a gas home with a petrol vehicle. If you do if you electrify all the appliances in your home, including your car, the total cost of not only servicing the interest rate but also the energy bills is a bit lower at about $17,300 on a standard 5.5% interest rate. But the real kicker is if we can figure out how to get people low interest, that savings really does increase. And so, you know, at a low interest point, we're looking at around about $12,000 is the cost per year to do all of that, which is anywhere between a $4,000 and a $5,000 saving a year.
So you've broken this down, looking at this graph for the different examples, whether you've got gas and petrol and or electrified appliances, vehicles, solar and battery. You've got the finance costs in there, the energy and fuel bills in there, the vehicle servicing in there, and the vehicle costs in there. And our fully electrified home
is a good measure.
Yeah, our fully electrified homes coming out at 1,500 under. Okay,
That's right.
Have you? Is this just the average household or an average household, or have you done a sweep across various setups, a more detailed analysis?
So what we've done is a few scenarios at the back of the report as well, because you know one of the key things is the average home. There is a lot more money spent on spatial heating than there is water heating, for example. But the moment that you add more people to the home, more people get to share the same energy in terms of spatial heating. But there is a much higher use of energy in water heating, for example, because more people have showers. It's the same with rural New Zealand, for example. In rural New Zealand, we drive a lot more kilometres than we do, than we do in the city. But the average driver in this report is set at $11,000. So we've done a whole bunch, 11,000 kilometres. So we've done a whole lot of different scenarios to sort of highlight, the different nuances of the households of New Zealand, really. And one of our big goals from here will be to eventually put up, in the medium term, put up some calculators so people can actually sort of calculate this stuff and get a really good, transparent understanding of what they should be doing. And I think the number one thing is, you know, if you're building a new home, that's great. You get to decide on all the machines up front. If you live in an existing home at the moment, you're going to replace it machine by machine. And so really what that comes down to is identifying the savings and the finance costs associated with that to work out whether that's the right thing for you. But based on this report and the analysis that we've done, we're very confident now that you'll always conclude the electric machine as the machine to buy.
I hate to throw this at you, but did it look at the EV part of the equation, the vehicle part of the equation, when the subsidies were still on? And is that relevant?
So we've done it without subsidies and we've done it with RUCs. I think the key thing from here is, you know, like if you already own an EV, including all the servicing costs, the tyres, the works, you're probably looking at about sort of 20 cents a kilometre for the average driver, and it's 40 cents a kilometre in a petrol car. But, you know, when you add in the, when you add in the cost of capital as well, that does jump up. But you still save around 6 cents per K, even when you add the cost of capital in per kilometre as well. So even with the additional cost, it does end up being cheaper to drive an electric vehicle than a petrol vehicle.
Let's talk about the financing then, because this is pivotal. And even being able to get a loan in the first place is going to be a challenge for many people. What are some banks doing by means of availability of low-cost loans for just this purpose? Do some have specific packages for EV purchase and electrification of a home?
Yeah, they do. In fact, most of the banks do, and we've actually just signed a partnership with ASB to go in and start innovating on some of the sustainability sort of loans as well to try and figure out how we can do things like increase the length of the loan. So, for example, a water heater at the moment might last 15 years, but you might only be able to finance it on a term of, say, 5 years at a low interest rate. So the question becomes, how is it that we can extend that length of finance? But I think the bigger problem than that is that, you know, like that's really good for people who own their own homes, but 47% of New Zealanders rent their own homes. A lot of people don't have mortgages. How is it that we can get, you know, finance products working for the whole of New Zealand so everyone can take advantage of this? And that's going to come from probably, you know, a mixed policy solution. There are things that can be done with, you know, subsidies to bring down the cost of capital. But, you know, we saw from the clean car rebate, for example, the subsidy worked well at getting more people to adopt EVs, but it hardly put a single mum from South Auckland in an EV, and she would have really benefited from that. So it really comes down to mixed policy solutions. How is it that we can, if we do subsidies, how are they fair and equitable that everyone can get those subsidies? And that really comes down to figuring out how we can solve the finance.
So at the moment, the only way to do this is to put it on the mortgage, essentially of the homeowner, not a tenant, obviously. And what sorts of range of rates or discounts on borrowing are there for someone who can do this? Some of them are quite low, are they?
Yeah, so in the model, we've modelled, you know, standard finance at 5.5%. And we've done sustainable finance at 1%.
Is anyone doing a 1% offer?
Yeah, so most of the banks are offering anywhere between 0-1%. I can't remember the specifics of their exact mortgage offerings, but they are there. The point, though, is that you know that is only going to service people who have mortgages.
That's true, Mike, but there's also another constraint on all this, which is our grid's capacity to cope with what's projected to be, posited to be, a doubling of demand over the next few decades. So there's only so fast 100%. You can go anyway, right?
This is a really interesting point. So I obviously run an electric cherry farm. I use about 9 times the electricity of my, you know, of the previous farmer that owned this property, which just sounds super scary. But I generate over half of that energy myself, and I don't take any of that energy during peak periods. So what that means really is I've been able to use all this extra energy without the need for any investment in additional infrastructure outside of my property. And I think that's a really key thing that we need to be taking into this energy transition is there is a massive opportunity if we treat the customer as being part of the infrastructure, we start to price electricity properly, make it cost reflective, and also really reward the customers that are offering benefits back to the grid, we can do this transition in a really smart way. And I think the thing that's missing from all of this at the moment is, yes, we need double to triple the amount of electricity that we currently have, but a huge significant portion of that could be generated on our own rooftops without the need for any consents, and it can save customers a huge amount of money at the same time.
Just roll back, though. You're producing 9 times the electricity of the previous owner.
No, I'm using
nine times the volume, but you're producing most of that yourself. But if you looked at this typical home example, what percentage of its use would be provided by solar and battery? In other words, would there be a net increase to its call on the national grid or not?
So in this particular model, what we do is we look at 50% of solar on rooftops being used immediately by the machines in the home, and the rest of it being stored in the battery. So yes, while the electricity consumption of the household goes up, the draw on the national grid will either stay linear or go down depending on the family. But the most important thing to remember is that we don't build infrastructure for off-peak times. We don't build three-lane highways for midnight drivers, right? And so, you know, at the moment, the general accepted figure is the grid is utilized at about sort of 40%. And so that means if we do it in a smart way and we smooth out the peaks on the grid using technology that customers now have available, that the prices over time have now plummeted for solar and batteries, we're going to be in a position where we can put a huge amount more electricity into the grid without a massive infrastructure upgrade. There going to need to be infrastructure upgrades. But that's the main point we want to get across.
But you also raised another barrier here, which is the way the system is constructed presently, which does not, because we hear from them all the time, does not fully reward those customers who do feed back into the grid. They feel utterly ripped off. And second, that ability to smart manage your utilisation of electricity without having to set an alarm for 2 a.m. is still quite nascent as well. We had Octopus Energy on recently talking about their app. It slightly creeps me out that an app's going to go in and determine when things get switched on and off in my house. But you know, smart technology enables that to be optimised. The question is whether the incentives are there for the electricity retailers, for example, let alone the gen tailors, to facilitate this in the smartest way. Are they or aren't they?
You've pretty much caught on to one of the key reasons why we formed Rewiring Aotearoa, is to really make sure we represent the customer's voice in this energy transition. For a very, very long time, you know, it's always been about commentators from the supply side saying what needs to be done. And that's generally over time resulted in higher grid electricity prices because the customer has to pay for the poles and wires as well as the electricity generation. And so that's a key point that we really are trying to get across now, is how is it that we can do cost-reflective pricing that changes customers and and enables them to save money by drawing power at certain times, and also save money, you know, save money by generating a lot of their own electricity themselves. And even bigger than that is if they can add value back to the grid, if they have spare capacity stored in their batteries, for example, and they can export that back and actually have a net positive impact on the grid during peak times, how are they rewarded for that? And it is getting pretty exciting. There are a few different innovative projects starting up now with the likes of, you know, EDBs like Orion and Wellington Electricity. They're looking at actually starting to pay people with batteries to export power back during peak periods. And if that happens, if there is fair feedback tariffs, batteries become a bankable option for all households in New Zealand.
Just looking at your organisation and where it's at, I'm interested that you might be working on this calculator that enables people to put their own numbers in. That would be a really significant service to offer. But when you're talking about some of this big policy impact, what has happened with your sister organisations overseas? Are they making ground in the likes of the United States in getting policies that facilitate this change at scale?
Yeah, I think the answer is 100%. And, you know, some of the products that are the finance products now that are going to be coming out of Australia, you know, I think are hugely exciting that New Zealand is going to be able to learn from. There's also a lot of learnings we can take from overseas and the likes of Australia now having 35% rooftop solar penetration, with some communities having over 50% rooftop solar penetration, while us in New Zealand only having 2.5%. There's a lot of opportunities to learn from there. So, you know, when Rewiring Aotearoa was created by a bunch of people and myself who liked what was happening overseas, and created a charity in New Zealand basically to argue the point for electrification in New Zealand, while taking into account the, you know, the different energy system that we have here, the different population, that kind of thing, and obviously coming up with unique policies, models like we've just done with this report, you know, that satisfy the New Zealand customer.
Mike, thanks very much. Mike Casey, who is Chief Executive of Rewiring Aotearoa.